Before the pyramids, cracking archaeology's greatest mystery. We're talking with Christopher Knight. I'll give you my theory on the whole layout of the henges and the pyramids into Orion's belt here on Earth in just a moment. But also coming up, we're going to do some really interesting work that Christopher Knight has done that not only ties together the pyramids and Stonehenge, but also our nation's capital as well. Now, I know there's been some Masonic work on this in the past. You've heard a little bit about it, but let's give Christopher Knight a little room to tie together Stonehenge, the pyramids, and Washington, D.C. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Christopher Knight is co-author of Before the Pyramids. You know, since we're going to get to a place where we're going to tie together Stonehenge, the pyramids in Washington, D.C., I'll give you my theory on Orion's Belt, okay? Why the layout of Orion's Belt to the pyramids? It's not that radical, but, you know, how in this country, you know, we've got a million places that are named after places in England. We have New Hampshire, we have New York, New Jersey, everything. When the people moved here, they sort of picked up where they left off, and they started to form their new place in the image and likeness of the place from which they had come. So wouldn't it make sense, if we're going to go with the extraterrestrial theory, that the reason why Orion's Belt becomes the constellation in the focus of the Stonehenge and the pyramid builders, that we could think that maybe they came from Orion's Belt, and they were just replicating home. This was just a little nod to where they had come from. What do you think?
That's a radical theory.
You could say ridiculous if you want to say ridiculous.
That's no, okay. Nothing's ridiculous. I used to be a little bit black and white about things, and I've learned. Because I had to change my mind radically and say to people, heck, you were right all along. So I couldn't say that. The one thing is, I mean, one guy I know, while he was an astrophysicist working in California, he's found evidence for Orion's Belt underneath the Sahara, structures that an observatory that was created when it was a lush green area before the sands came down, and they appear to have a knowledge 18,000 years ago of the distance between the stars of Orion's Belt and others. But one thing you must remember, the stars aren't actually in a line. They just appear to be from the Earth. They're actually hugely different distances apart. There's no connection between three stars of Orion's Belt apart from the way they look on Earth. So if you're an extraterrestrial that had come from one of those stars or a planet around one of those stars, it could only be one of them, not all of them.
Well, fair enough. But, I mean, it's sort of like the American eagle isn't actually American. It's just an eagle.
But that point is really well made, that no one invents a religion. No one invents anything, really. They reinterpret what went before. As you say, New Hampshire, New York, etc. People named places, and they recreated the new world as an improvement on the last. Everyone improves or thinks they're improving on what has gone before. So there is something hugely ancient and important about Orion's Belt, and I can't any longer disregard the possibility of some alien intervention. It's a legitimate, I don't find any evidence to support it, but it's completely legitimate to think it.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm with you 100% on what you just said. But it just sort of seems like if it keeps being drawn, if it's that same constellation, then maybe it was just a symbol. It wasn't a matter of it being, they weren't trying to recreate the whole heaven. They weren't trying even to be all that accurate, but it became a symbol of good old home. Well, and go ahead.
That might be the case, but the interesting thing about these three stars is that they do embody all of the mathematics that underlies their system, the distance between them in terms of time and space, actually underpins the measurement systems that the world has always used. So there's, like, they've identified these stars in the sky that just happen to have this strange relationship. And of course, they also point to the star Sirius, which is the fourth brightest object in the sky, and it's the brightest star by far. So there are various candidate reasons why they may be important, but all we can say with absolute certainty is that they did measure them in great detail. They did lay them down on the ground, on the Earth, and it's quite right to speculate as to why, because as more evidence comes up, we can then see which of the theories stands up as we find more and more evidence, because new evidence is coming thick and fast these days. And we've got to start to believe the unbelievable, because I've certainly had to change my very conservative views.
So, Christopher Knight, we've established here for people who are just tuning in that there was a proto-civilization that was practicing a kind of proto-religion before the pyramids. That there was something that existed, and whether or not the cross-pollinization came from inhabitants of the British Isles going down to Egypt, or people from Egypt traveling up there, somewhere along the line, this lineup ends up in Egypt. And that's kind of where you pick up the book. I like, for people who haven't read it yet, Before the Pyramids, it's just out. It's a little bit of a travelogue, too. It tells the story of how you all cracked this mystery. So it's not just a scientific breakdown. It's kind of a page-turner. At some point, you really do capture some of the breathlessness of the Da Vinci Code as you're trying to figure out this. Because you had kind of a, to digress a moment, you had kind of a window of opportunity to look at the archaeology of this because of the growth of Cairo.
That's right. It was certainly ironic. But Alan Butler and I were looking closely at these particular henges, very important henges in England, and realizing that they pointed to another henge. Well, we thought, if these are Orion's Belt, are they pointing to Sirius? In which case, it would be quite a long, many miles away over that way. And we went looking, and sure enough, there was a henge exactly where it should be, the Sirius henge. And strange thing is, it was exactly 10,000 meters from center to center away. So again, they were measuring it in units that we think are modern. And we thought, well, we know it's here 1,000 years before the pyramids. We wonder if the Egyptians copied this, or however it came about, did they do something similar and create a Sirius henge? So we mapped it out and found that it would be out in the desert to the southwest of Cairo. And we looked on good old Google Earth, and we could see there was some sort of construction going on in the area, because it is just desert, but there was construction work going on of some description. And we thought we'd better jump on a plane quickly, and off we went to Cairo and instructed our bewildered taxi driver not to take us to the pyramids or the Sphinx as everyone else, but drive us out into this particular place in the desert. And he couldn't work out why on earth we wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And we found the location, and it was being cleared for the building of a new satellite city for Cairo, because the population's exploding there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And we thought, you know, after 4,500 years, we got here a few months too late, because whatever was there has just been scraped away.
Right. But that would have been where it would have been, where you believe that is, if the pattern follows, that would have been the where Sirius would have been marked in this constellation. Where else do you see this? I mean, we see it here, and who else has henges? And are any of the other henges? I remember wasn't there a Bosnian henge, and aren't there some other places?
There are henges known across Europe, and indeed in the New World. I was contacted by a very eminent professor in Canada, who's actually a chemist and a physicist and an astrophysicist, simultaneously has PhDs in both areas, which is pretty unusual. And his specialism is kinetics change. And he was one of the first to describe how spiral galaxies work. But he's also, over the last 30 years, something of a very good, to put it mildly, amateur archaeologist. Amateur in the sense that he doesn't belong to a department of archaeology, but completely thorough in what he does. And he's found that there is a site in Alberta which is as old as Stonehenge, doing exactly the same thing. So, you know, it's just people don't catalogue and recognise these things. Now, I was looking at Washington, D.C. when I was contributing to a program on the Founding Fathers, I think it was for the Discovery Channel, and I was just checking a few things on Google Earth, Washington, D.C., and then I just noticed something that looked like a henge. So Washington, D.C. has a henge. And I measured its dimensions, and they were pretty interesting. And I looked it up to see what is this henge in Washington, D.C., which, of course, is a relatively new city. It's over 200 years old. And it was actually the Naval Observatory built in the mid-19th century. But it is a henge because they were used it for exactly the same purposes of timing star movements and making their naval charts and measuring the Earth. So it is a henge. It's now
a henge in purpose.
Sorry?
A henge in purpose.
Yes. I mean, which is another great bit of proof as to what the ancients were doing. You know, nothing changes to that extent. They were using clocks instead of handheld pendulums, but all a clock is a automated way of swinging a pendulum. We've done away with the pendulums today, but they do exactly the same thing. So when they in the mid-1800s, when they built the U.S. Navy built this henge, they wouldn't have called it a henge, but that's exactly what it is. They've got it's on a flat plane, overlooking the city. And they could measure the movements of the stars by creating it's an artificial horizon. That's what a henge actually is.
Right.
So you can control the horizon rather than being trees on it and bumps on lumps on it as there normally is. So it demonstrates nothing changes. A henge is a great instrument for all time. But that's what started me looking more closely at Washington, D.C., and I was just astonished at what I went on to find.
So the connection that you draw between then the henges of the UK and of Egypt, how does that inform the layout of Washington, D.C.?
Well, the Washington, D.C. is a very interesting city in that it was laid out geometrically. So a lot of people have made claims about the meaning of the because you can draw pictures, you can draw Mickey Mouse's face, you can draw anything you like on a grid that's got so many angles to it. But some serious work, David Ogerson, for example, has demonstrated the astronomical layout of Washington, D.C., which is really good stuff, and connects to the ancient purpose, because the plan was, clearly, as I was to find out, to make Washington, D.C., one big astronomical observatory and to honor all of the important things that happen in the sky. But more than that, they used the ancient measures, the ancient units of measure that were used before Stonehenge was built, and certainly that were used at the pyramids, to build Washington, D.C. Every single part of the plan, the original plan and buildings still being built in this century, are carefully located using very precisely measured seconds of megalithic arc. These are the units that were used 5,000 and 6,000 years ago. And I haven't told anybody, but the whole city is built using not the meter, not the yard, not the foot, but these super ancient measurement systems. And it is a reconstruction of the old way, the people of civilization one. There is some connection between Washington, D.C. and these highly advanced people that lived in the distant past. And strangely enough, to bring me right back to where I started, the conduit for this knowledge appears to be Freemasonry.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly the connection with Freemasonry in Washington, D.C., that is indisputable.
Oh, I mean, sure.
I mean, that's not even, and for, you know, I don't know, and I, because I never read the last Dan Brown novel, so I don't know what his points were, but at least in all the conversations we've had here on Coast to Coast, very well established that they used the mathematical and philosophical geometry of Freemasonry in the layout of the parks, the main roads, the monuments, and it was all intended, at least in one understanding I have, to sort of encourage God's blessing on this country. What would you say the reason was for the layout of Washington, D.C.?
The answer probably is given in the ancient rituals of Freemasonry, which are not used so much these days, but they still exist. And it describes that how for the last 3,000 years, they're under the supposed instructions of King Solomon, these families were sent out to rebuild a city great enough to rule the world, that would bring the power of God to earth, because we were living in a city, or governed by a city, that was fit for God to rule from, because it obeyed all of the ancient rules of heaven and took all the blessings of heaven, and would create a conduit between the divine and the ruling of the earth. And the families involved happened to be people like George Washington. He's of that line. And it appears they had tried to rebuild this great city in England from the time of 1066, of the invasion, the Norman invasion. But they realized they were getting nowhere because of politics, and they decided the only way to do it was in a new land where you can, it's malleable, you can shape it and direct it. And these families went to the United States and formed the United States. And obviously Philadelphia was the capital, so as it grew. But then they said, now's the time to design our great city, the city that will link to heaven, because it will have everything correct in the ancient way. And of course, these people were Freemasons, George Washington, right. Benjamin Franklin. And until recently, I thought he wasn't, but I now think he is. Thomas Jefferson, who was absolutely instrumental in all this, and started to create his own unit of measurement using the ancient techniques and using pendulums. They were never adopted, and he started by creating a line from the North Pole to the South Pole, that a primary meridian that went through Washington, D.C., right to the middle of the White House, which, again, wasn't adopted. It's still Greenwich in England is the zero meridian. But he identified his. So it was going to be the most fundamental city in the world. And that's still the plan. Because quite clearly, they are building the most important structures. The World War II Memorial that was built just a few years ago is built using these same measures again. The Pentagon itself is the most perfect megalithic structure in the world today.
Let's explore that. Why is the Pentagon the most perfect megalithic structure in the world today? And then I want to ask you about the Washington Monument and any of the other significant buildings as you see them through your lens. How do they all tie together back to the time before the pyramids? Cracking archaeology's greatest mystery. We're talking with Christopher Knight. There's a lot more to get to here before we get to your questions and comments at the top of the hour. In fact, I want to ask him not just about the layout of Washington, D.C., but I want to ask you about the difference in the perception of Civilization One all the way through today the difference between designing a city that would give us God's power or God's blessing. I think that may speak to a battle that we have going on in the very fabric of our country to this day. The difference between designing something which would give us God's power and God's blessing. And it all existed before the pyramids. Next on Coast to Coast. If you missed the Tommy James story about his life trying to make hits for the mob and the threat that he lived under the whole time, go back and listen to the first hour and Streamlink. If you don't have Streamlink, you can find that at coasttocoastam.com, where you can link up to the work of Christopher Knight as well. Various books, almost all of them, I think, are still in print, including going back to his classic, The Hiram Key, about masonry. And that also ties into the book Before the Pyramids, the henges of England and throughout Europe tied to the pyramids using the same kind of geometry that they used in laying out Washington, D.C. So what about some of the monuments, the iconography of Washington, D.C.? And what was the purpose of the founding fathers in laying out Washington, D.C. the way that it was imagined? To bring God's power or God's blessing to the United States? I think there's a difference. I want to hear what he has to say based on his knowledge of ancient Masonic philosophy. Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So if Washington, D.C. shares much of the same ancient geometry as the pyramids, as Stonehenge, Christopher Knight, let me ask you, in the minds of the people that saw this connection with a thousands-year-old ancient tradition, which one was the most important, to bring God's blessing on this new country or to give it God's power over the world?
That's an interesting question, and I take the point of the difference that you make. I've spent a lot of time as a Freemason trying to tell people there is no such thing as a Masonic conspiracy, because particularly in the U.S. there is a feeling that there is some hidden agenda, and I've spent a lot of time saying no, there isn't. I've just found that there actually is.
And so was that a good day or a bad day?
Look, interesting, confusing. It's sort of, but it's right at the very pinnacle of one aspect, and most possibly important aspect of Freemasonry, that this comes from the very, very top and beyond into some other organization that almost sits above Freemasonry and has a very ancient ideal, remembering that these ideas are probably 10,000 years old. And there is a continuity of memory. This isn't a reconstruction. There is a continuity of memory of these, and they are rebuilding Washington. And the difference between God's blessing and the God's power is a sort of more modern difference. I think they want God's power, because blessing is a more Christian area idea. This is more ancient and more direct. It is the power of God and the goodness of God. It's not, therefore, negative, I don't think. They see it as positive, and they're trying to do something that they think is God's work, and maybe is. Certainly, it's in tune with the essence of the universe. And until really recently, I was an atheist, and I can tell you I'm no longer an atheist, because I think these people were clearly onto something of such importance that it transcends science. As some scientists are saying today, the route to understanding God is better done through science than through theology. That's debatable, obviously, but it certainly changed my mind. And what these people are trying to create is bringing the power of God to Earth so that they can use that power to properly help the planet become unified under one
world government.
Yes, I'm afraid that's the way of looking at it.
A new world order
that is inclusive of all religions. It's not I mean, the United States was very much obviously a Christian country, but the thing about Freemasonry and every aspect of these families is that they teach that all religions have their pathway to God and must be respected. And that, of course, that's a fundamental part of the whole ideology behind the founding of the United States.
Well, let me tease out a couple of things that you said in there and get your response to them. First, on the idea of the difference between God's blessing and God's power, one assumes a kind of hegemony, a right to a hegemony. If you have God's power, then you have the right to impose that on other people and to come in and to rearrange their lives because you have at least a self-perceived divine edict,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the God's blessing is the more passive belief that we're just, you know, we want to be happy and we want to bring, you know, as many people into this wonderful tent as possible and to try to fix our problems. But it's not about fixing other people. It's about fixing ourselves and trying to be worthy of God's blessing. And I think that those are kind of two different ideas. We see that maybe played out in the American Civil War, which was about trying to heal the scar of slavery. As Abraham Lincoln and other people saw it, slavery would prevent us from experiencing God's blessing as long as we continue that awful practice. So that's where I see that, you know, the difference between a kind of empiricism or empiricalism, I guess, better, and the other being a kind of much more self-reflective opportunity to be a leader by example as opposed to a leader by force.
Yeah. I took the point you were making, and I understand the difference. And I'm pretty sure that originally it is the God's power that they're talking about. And that,
interesting.
But I think it has become... And this is only my reading. I can't speak for these people. I'm a detective, and I've just found out about what's going on. So I can only interpret it to my best shot. No one said to me, actually, this is what we're about. I think they've probably become somewhat modified. But this runs deep into presidents and the power base at the United States, the Pentagon. And I think people would say that there has been a policy of helping the rest of the world to see sense, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is maybe, if we're being judgmental about it, too much of assuming that we've got God's power, which is classic of a lot of religions in the past and some today, that, you know, they think, you know, I'm God's mouthpiece, therefore what I say is right, and you will obey it.
Right.
There can be a lack of tolerance, and maybe that is an accusation that can be laid here, but that's only my... It's a subtlety, but an important subtlety.
No, I think it's important. I appreciate you addressing it. So who are the they of whom you speak when you say they have told me and you believe they are doing what? Who's the they?
Well, according to Freemasonry, the ancient rituals of Freemasonry, which are essentially they are a bit like the Bible insofar as they record what has gone on in the past, the steps that have gone through the millennia. They identify that a whole group of Enochian priests were identified, and these were hereditary priesthoods that, for the first 1,000 years, were principally involved in trying to build the New Jerusalem in the Holy Land. But after the war with the Romans, the disastrous war, 66, that ended up in 70 AD with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple under Titus and the death of 1.3 million Jews, which was a colossal number in those days, these people fled principally to Europe, to France and to other places. And started to rebuild their power base there and to reconstruct the New Jerusalem. I'm personally convinced by the evidence that they were the drivers to create the First Crusade. They entered the church, they took control. The popes were under their control. Pope Urban, who instigated the First Crusade, was one of these family members and was a hereditary Jewish priest. And this isn't rabbinical Judaism. This is much older, more ancient form of Judaism. And those families went right through to George Washington's family, and the symbolism and the whole structure of the ancient beliefs were embedded in these families. Now, whether those families are still fully intact or whether they have created an institution, a small elite, to take this forward, I don't know. But speaking to a friend of mine in the US who's a 33rd degree Freemason about the structure of the 33rd degree, which is very hard to find information about. You can find huge amounts of information publicly about nearly all of Freemasonry. But what goes on at the top is particularly interesting because in the Northern jurisdiction, there are just 33 men who are real, fully blown 33rd degree Freemasons at any one time. But the person that governs that comes from outside, and it isn't like the rest of Freemasonry democratic in any way. They are told what to do. And it's become clear that even presidents have done what they're told. Now, who these people are today, I don't know, and they don't know, but they just obey.
Who the other 33 are? Yeah, we don't know who they are. Are we talking about the elite group of the 33 degree Masons?
Yes, because their fingerprints are all over this, and the degrees, particularly the 32nd and 33rd degree, describe the building of Washington. The building and the Pentagon is following the content of the degree of particularly the 32nd degree, which is about warfare and defense, and uses all of the structure itself is laid out, the Pentagon, that is, using these ancient measurements. It's a 25 times scale model of Stonehenge, perfectly and astronomically aligned, and creates this great triangle across all of Washington, which is all using 33 seconds of megalithic arc, and for the 33 degrees between the Capitol building, the Pentagon, and the actual heart of Washington, D.C., which is the center of the ellipse, which is the President's Park south of the White House. In the center there is something very special, and that is the heart of Washington, D.C., which is the political, philosophical heart of the United States and would be the world.
That's very interesting. You mentioned in passing an organization above Freemasonry.
That's what it looks like. I mean, Freemasonry was, in my view, invented out of necessity after the power of the church dissipated with the rise of Protestantism, and suddenly you couldn't control the whole mass of people through the church because it fragmented, and therefore they use their own ancient rituals to form this new organization. This is based in one building in Scotland, which was the old epicenter, to create Freemasonry, which was a new way of using their old ideas to carry forward an all-inclusive organization where they could bring in powerful people from whatever their religion, which of course was extended to Judaism and Islam and any other religion that believes in God.
You know, the difference in so many of the early, as we know, many of the most influential founding fathers were deists,
yeah,
as opposed to Christians. And they, you know, this was the classic argument, the description about the deist philosophy being that, you know, if you looked at God as the watchmaker that set everything in motion, wound the watch, and then has, you know, since then stood back as time unfolds and doesn't get involved. Is that same belief in here that there is no God that's interacting with us, that is has a divine hand in our current events? Is that the same belief that dominating that?
It appears to me, and this is just my best shot at it, that there is a belief that has happened because, if you like, God has taken his bat home because we're not worthy of him.
Right.
So the necessity is to recreate the connection so that he does interact once again with us. And that requires the perfection of building the city that is that reflects all of the mathematics and rhythms of his universe in this ancient and divine way, and also that the people behave with probity and decency as well. It's so in every sense it becomes the city of God.
The Washington D.C.
Yeah.
Referring to, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
becomes the city of God. That the we're talking with Christopher Knight. The book is Before the Pyramids, and we're sort of tying together the earliest sacred geometry of the henges, particularly Stonehenge, into Orion's Belt, into the pyramids, into a replication on Earth of Orion's Belt, and then how that is reflected too in Washington, D.C. What's the trajectory? What's the time, you know, looking forward? How do they have a kind of a drop dead date that they hope to be able to get this done by? Is there anything that they're up against in some perception of an ancient calendar that they feel like they're racing against?
Not to my knowledge. I think they've expected to achieve this. Well, they expected to have achieved it at the time of Christ, when Jerusalem was actually more splendid than Rome. It was just fantastic. They thought they were getting there. And when they went to war with the Romans, they thought they would win that, and that would become the New Age, when God would return, led by the Messiah, the returning King of the Jews, but a king in a much more divine way. It didn't happen. They then spent the next 1,000 years trying to build that in Europe, and that failed. So they built it in the United States with far more success than they've ever enjoyed before. And I think they feel they're very close. But as far as I'm aware, they're not working. There's no ancient calendar. There is a calendar system based on 1,440 years, which runs throughout the Old Testament and in fact, the New Testament, because the star prophecy of the coming Messiah, which is in Numbers in the Old Testament, describes the pattern that 1,440 years to the day after Moses parted the Red Sea for the people to come out of Egypt, the Messiah would arrive to the blazing star of the Holy Shekinah, which it did. And that would herald the arrival of the new Messiah. And certainly Jesus Christ claimed to be that Messiah and may well be that, have been that Messiah. But it didn't herald the new age that they expected, that is described in such detail in the Dead Sea Scrolls, for example.
When the sons of light would overcome the sons of darkness.
Absolutely.
Right, and there would be a new creation. What do you, in your research into this crypto-masonry that not even many Masons are aware of, what would the new world order look like? What is this one world government going to be like?
Well, I think, I'm basically a detective digging into the past and finding connections where I would not expect any connections to be. And yes, you can't help but try and make sense of it. But I definitely get the feeling that The United States was inward looking for some time to get everything, get its own house in order, if you like. But I think they're now looking towards a unified global currency, or at least they were before things went pear-shaped a couple of years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago. And organized power blocks, because they knew the Soviet Union, for example, was a silly experiment that was going nowhere. They had an agenda, which is an agenda over thousands of years, and they sense they're getting close, and it's political harmonization.
Look out, Iran. Look out, Pakistan, baby. All right, we'll pick this up in just a minute. We'll also start to bring in your questions and comments on the phone for Christopher Knight, talking about what existed before the pyramids and how that's affecting us today on Coast to Coast.